This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. We have, of course, because I say it all the time, and it's always true, a wonderful, interesting guest who contributes a lot to the world in a way that you're going to see in a minute. It's Miriam Mochkin, who is, I would say, my old friend, because it feels like it, but you're not that old, so I don't get to say it in that way. But we've known each other, it appears, forever, and every time I talk to you, I learn something so wonderful. Miriam is the mother of five, the wife of a rabbi, and a San Francisco native, a community leader. You're busy all the time. And one of the things that Miriam does is gives classes. And there's so much communication right now. And I'm going to just go right to you after I kind of set this up, because I'm always interested. There's so much communication, newspapers and television and internet, and things that get passed around are so often not correct. And there's a lot of, I've noticed, the things people say about the Orthodox Jews are so, I mean, you're smiling. I know we're both going to be laughing. But I don't know why people pass on misinformation. And when I heard that you were giving a class in, you were calling it a bridal class?
Yes.
I got so interested and I wondered what you were teaching people. And please take it away. Because you said also that the women who came to you are not religious Jews.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So focusing in on the community leader aspect, my husband and I lead a community, a Jewish community here in San Francisco. And most of the individuals that participate in the different aspects of our community are non-practicing Jews. We call our community the Jewish Learning Institute. That's the learning aspect. And then we have a community specifically for young Jews in their 20s and 30s.
And so the people who come to you who are not religious Jews, I know why they come to you, because you are so much fun.
Thank you.
And they learn a lot.
Well, I like to have fun, so it has to be an aspect of.
And there's no demand, by the way. There's no demand that they live any certain way other than when they're the way they're living.
Oh, not at all.
It's like you don't require anything of them.
And that's why we call this young aspect of our community, the 20s and 30s, zehut, which means identify in Hebrew. And the whole concept is that people should identify with being Jewish. Not that it's a requirement, but that when they do connect with our community, they're connecting on that level as identifying. Like this is something that identifies with me. I'm Jewish and I want to participate. So couples have approached us who are getting ready to be wed, and they've asked my husband to marry them. In traditional sense, they want to have an Orthodox wedding, even though they are not Orthodox per se, but they like the old traditions that Orthodoxy brings to the table when it comes to marriage. And sometimes there's a lot of misconceptions, even though they've chosen to have an Orthodox wedding. They don't really know what they're signing themselves up for.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to ask you about. So well, they think they're getting something kind of authentic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not filtered out by modern life.
Yes.
And so they want something authentic because the way they feel about each other is authentic.
Yes.
They want their life to be based on
that. You know, you think of marriage as ever after and forever, and they want to connect to the beginning of where they came from when it comes to this very important.
Well, so they know
what
direction forever after is going in.
Yes.
So what do they think they're going to get from you?
So that's where the bridal classes come in, because my husband, when people call him, or it's even people we know, ask him to officiate, he says, well, me and my wife co-officiate. She prepares the bride. I prepare the groom, as in this is my husband speaking. And then we combine it and do it together in order to prepare them for this time in their life. And it's not just to be prepared for that one day. It's to be prepared with tools for their future in their relationship.
So you get the women for a while and you talk about.
Yes.
What
so I'll split. So during the time before their wedding, depending on how in depth they want to go, I basically give an option. We can do six classes. And that's kind of like the full thing. You go in depth into every aspect that Judaism has to offer in regards to marriage and the wedding. Or we can do a speedy one and do it in three.
Okay, so what does the speedy one include? Like, what is the most? What are the most important things to get them to stand together?
Okay,
and say they do.
So, in Judaism, we look at a marriage as in, why do we need marriage anyhow? Like, what people can live together, they can be committed to each other. What is marriage about anyhow? And the Jewish response to that is that it's affirming and welcoming God into your relationship. And basically that when things do get tough, which there's always good days and bad days
in every
relationship, that there's a third partner to fall back on and to realize that it's, you know, there's something interesting about the Hebrew letters, which me and Janet and I discuss very often. And this is actually how I start off my bridal classes with, there's a man is called an ish in Hebrew and a woman is called an isha. So the letters of that are Aleph, Yud, Shin for Ish, and for Isha is Aleph, Shin, He. Okay? So if you take out the Yud from Ish and you take out the He from Isha, you have the same word, which is just an Aleph and a Shin, mm-hmm. and it means Ish, which is fire.
Oh, and I knew I was going to cry. Give me a box of peanuts. Okay.
So when God's in a relationship, the yud and the hey represent God. When you put the yud and the hey back in and you have God in a relationship, there's never just blaming the other. There's always saying, God, there's a reason why God put us together and we have a mission together in this world. And that's what people are affirming with having a wedding, actually instating that this is our commitment to one another.
Oh, and you're doing it in front of witnesses and people. Is this significant?
Yes. So there's, in these classes, there's the spiritual aspects of the what I teach them in regards to, you know, what a Jewish marriage brings. And then there's the actual laws, and because a Jewish wedding has a lot of protocol. So,
I think most weddings do.
Yeah,
you look at any.
There's an order to things, or else you know, you're just going into the woods, and you could do that without anybody officiating. So, it's interesting how back to this concept of the Aish. What does Aish mean? It means fiery. So a relationship does need passion. It does. It's important. That's why the Ish and the Isha, when combined, have these important letters of Ish, of fire. But it also needs the balance of spirituality. That passion on its own, without a channel, could send you, you know, if you just want to have passionate love,
then why
commit to one person?
Right. There is that whole We Got Married in a Fever. There's a song like that, actually. Hotter than a Brussels sprout. Yeah. The fire goes out sometimes, even if for a day. I have a question though. When you're having one of those bad days and you are ready to skewer each other, how do you prepare people to step back and call God into a relationship?
So that's where the practical tools come in to these bridal classes. So the main aspect of a Jewish marriage talks about mikvah, which I'm not going to get into a whole mikvah class here, but mikvah is an actual ritual bath that a woman goes into before her wedding to prepare herself in a spiritual state for the actual day of the wedding. Mm-hmm. So what's so special spiritually about that one day of your wedding that you need to prepare yourself for, aside for obviously your hair and makeup and beautiful dress and all the flowers at your wedding, that Yom Kippur is looked at as the most important day of the year in the Jewish calendar. And And the wedding day is compared to the personal Yom Kippur of a couple. So
in what way? What does that mean?
In what way is that they're all eyes are on them, right? They're going under this canopy because a traditional Orthodox wedding has a chuppah, which is in comparison that what is Yom Kippur? It's a day of atonement. That's what it's called. What does it mean to atone? That you're highlighting any wrong that's kind of happened in your life, and you really want to bring amends to things. So what does it mean that, why are you thinking of this, of atonement on the day of your wedding? This is
when you haven't offended anybody yet. Did you?
So the idea is you want to go into a marriage with a clean slate.
Oh, sure.
You want to go into a marriage, you know, realizing that I'm starting my life right now with this individual.
Right.
And really coming in with this perspective that everything's good. Everything's good. And not carrying any baggage with you. So there's that component of it being the personal Yom Kippur. But then there's the component that I also include in the classes where we go through the steps of a wedding, which include a lot of different blessings. Mm-hmm. And all of these blessings say the word in them called simcha, which is happiness. So people have actually, personally, I got married here in San Francisco, and the next day on the radio, there was a certain individual at my wedding who was a big talk show host, and he spoke on the radio the next day about he had never seen such joy.
Oh, yes.
And there were aspects of my wedding that were serious in regards to the ceremony, et cetera. But the joy is also the most important component. And that's also part of these bridal classes. So this concept of balance that we were talking about, that bringing God into the relationship instead of it just being that ish, that fire. That's right.
I have a question. When you talk about balance and just getting back to the concept of the mikvah. Now, I don't know how many people listening to this really would know, be familiar enough with anything to, but it's still going to be interesting because there is a concept. I hear it all the time. I'm out in the world and I hear people talk, and every once in a while you hear somebody say that a woman, a Jewish woman, has to go to the mikvah, to this ritual bath, because she's considered unclean. Hello there. I want you to say that the men also go plenty.
Yes.
If this isn't something just for women.
Yeah. No, the mikvah is a tool used in marriage, but it's actually a tool for men. There are men that go daily to the mikvah.
And before the Sabbath.
Yes.
So it's
and
not,
there's utensils. We bring utensils into this ritual bath. When we buy anything new that's ceramic, kind of transfer the energy of what the ceramics were.
In other words, for cooking and serving.
Yes. The mikvah has
So it's a really far reaching thing. This has nothing to do with women have to go men go, and so does your silverware.
So does your silverware. And your ceramics.
And your dishes.
So the whole concept of mikvah is this idea that a mikvah is a body of water, and it's a body of a natural source. It needs to come from rainwater.
Or lake or ocean?
Lake? If it's a man-made lake, it cannot be a mikvah.
Okay.
Or the ocean is fine, but the ocean's a little difficult.
No, I understand that, but just the concept of
water. Yeah, the concept of a natural body of water that is coming
directly. So it doesn't
directly
have to be clear water?
No. It can be any, you know, salt water is fine.
Thank you.
From the sea.
What is it that the women, in your experience, what are they most surprised at? What brings the really out of them?
So the idea that this concept that you just discussed about being unclean, it's a misconception that Judaism looks at women as unclean, because how is mikvah incorporated into bringing God into this marriage? How is this balance in the tool of utilizing mikvah to have a balanced marriage? It's basically that when a woman menstruates, she afterwards immerses in this body of water and abstains from having sex with her husband during that menstruation until after she immerses in these mikvah waters.
I heard something once, years ago, actually from another friend who's a religious Jewish woman, was so touched by it, and I had never known this, that there is also that whole concept of you have that few days where you do not relate to each other sexually. And that means, you know, no cajoling and no trying to seduce your way into things and no using, you know, the male role or the female role to get what you want. You are dealing with each other in absolute equality and friendship.
Yes.
And that also there's
and
very
that's
little...
a bit of the gift of it. As far as personally, I have seen this practice of...
Don't be flirting with me to get your way because it's not going to work this 4 days.
And,
yes,
and
talk to me like a human
no,
being.
No, it's brought balance to my own marriage.
And I've also heard that there's relatively little sexual boredom.
Yes.
Is that, can I say that?
Yeah. Because it brings excitement because people, when you abstain from something, you want it even more. And that's how it kind of goes. But so the mikvah is this idea of not cleaning you once you've menstruated and now you have to be clean and
you could do that in your shower.
Yeah. All right. But the idea is that before you come together in unity, which Judaism looks at the practice of having sex with another individual as you're actually going back to how we were created. You're becoming one with another person. And when God created Adam, God then took a part of Adam and formed Eve. So the male and female counterparts were originally one.
Oh, and so it's not good to just live to serve yourself.
It's about,
right?
Yeah, if we live to serve ourselves, we could just go up to a mountain and connect with God. Wouldn't that be incredible? But no, Judaism brings us down to this earth and says having sex with another individual, obviously, it gives us the framework of marriage, but is the ultimate good deed and enjoyment in this world as far as Jewish practice, because you're completing something. You're completing something. And other religions sometimes look at, you know, as the sin. They look at a sexual encounter as the sin. But Judaism actually praises it and calls it a mitzvah, which is a mitzvah is like...
a commandment to
do,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So...
And there's also not that, I mean, this is a question really, the idea of it's only for having children.
No,
because
not at all.
It's not like the children are a lovely side effect.
Yeah, the children are a lovely side effect and...
byproduct.
And a byproduct. Mm-hmm. And it's also, what I want to include here is that in most of the bridal classes I give, because the couple not necessarily lives a religious life, mm-hmm. They're utilizing mikvah for this one time of pre-wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So why would it be important just to do it once pre-wedding? It brings you. So why do people think of this unclean state? Why did it become this misconception in Judaism that when you menstruate,
mm-hmm.
you have to become clean again? So there's Hebrew wording that the Jewish law talks about. And when these words were translated, they were translated into clean and unclean.
Oh, that's
and
a lot
that's
of
that's why. That's and also based on our history where people didn't have bathing in their own home,
mm-hmm.
there was a bit of a mixed perception of the bathing house being either the bathing house or the mikvah. So are we going to the mikvah? But the part of going to the mikvah these days, mikvahs are spas. They're gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I always show this video to my brides of this Jewish girl was, she has a show on YouTube called, mm-hmm. Sexy in a Certain City. Mm-hmm. So like kind of, and she uses the song from Sex in the City. Mm-hmm. Like she does this little clip about trying to find sexiness in certain cities. Mm-hmm. So she has this one clip called Sexy in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And she goes to the opening of the brand new mikvah there. And I show this clip because it brings mikvah into our modern day. And it helps us, you know, visualize it as something that's approachable and that's reachable for the modern day woman. And the concept, why is it a spa? We can go to a spa, is because before an individual immerses in the mikvah, they actually have to be so clean. There can't be a speck of dirt on them.
Or nail polish around the cuticles.
Yeah, or any of that. Uh-huh. So it has nothing to do with cleanliness.
Not just dirt. I mean, markings from the outside.
Yeah,
world,
yeah.
Nail polish isn't dirt.
You're not even, right? There's the reason why there's, you go to a spa-like experience is because when you do go into the waters, you want to be fully immersed. You don't want there to be anything separating you. So, So I'm just using this concept to rule out this idea of cleanliness versus uncleanliness.
So you're saying if there's anything on you, then the water isn't getting to your entire body.
Yes. Huh. So then to further about mikvah is mikvah was used in our history as when someone would pass away and someone came in contact with a dead body, mm-hmm. they would always immerse in the mikveh afterwards. Mm-hmm.
Is that to mark the difference between
being alive?
And alive? Oh.
Yes. Yes. So what does menstruation have to do with the mikveh? So what is menstruation? There's actual death going on in our body. And so that's why the mikveh waters are utilized within a female connection to God.
So you're saying there is with every egg not fertilized, there is the little whisper of death.
Yes.
That something didn't become what it could have.
Yes.
Oh.
So that's what mikvah is all about. That's the whole concept of mikvah, that before a
wedding.
So
the whole thing is just being aware. Everything that has to do with the mikvah. I get from you a lot. Well, I understand that a lot. And I think that's true in all religions when people do it authentically, that everything is a moment of awareness, to be aware.
Yes. And that's the concept of a spiritual marriage, is being aware that it's not just about us, that there is a third partner that helps us and guides us and mm-hmm. really cares that this relationship works out.
I have a quick question, then I want to get to the love letter that I know you want to do.
Yes.
Because I'm eager about that. Other religions also have, you know, all kinds of baptism things and rituals which have to do with submersion. Do you know anything about the others? I mean, do they have that same feeling? Maybe somebody will write in or let us know about just being purified somehow. Is it always that?
I don't look at it as submersion or submissiveness.
No, I didn't say submission.
Yeah.
You said submersion totally in the water.
Yeah, submersion totally in the water.
But other religions,
I said immersion. Immersion.
Oh, okay, immersion.
I look at a difference between submersion like you're being put into something. And immersion is really like you're surrounding yourself with something.
Oh, good. Okay, I never even thought of that.
So that's personally how I present it, because that's how I feel in regards to this concept of we're not being submissive to God. We're really incorporating
him into the
relationship.
Right.
Do you get what I mean? We're bringing him in.
And you're immersing yourself in all kinds of other things at the same time.
Yes.
I like that. Thank you. What's your love letter going to be?
My love letter is going to be that I want to write to all the brides that I've learned with. And And just tell them what a wonderful experience each of these bridal classes have been for me.
What have they been to you? Because if you tell us that, we'll know what your love letter
is. It's been that marriage is so huge. It's so huge because it's you're deciding that, oh, I'm not just taking it as far as commitment, but I'm letting an outside force say that we're married, whether it's the court or, you know, whether it's God, whatever it is, it's huge. You're binding yourself to something. And I feel really honored that people trust me to be part of this process for them. And I just want to remind them.
So it's a thank you note,
yeah,
in a way.
It's a thank you note for them giving me this opportunity to have been part of.
How many women have you had in your bridal class? Is this the first?
I do it one-on-one.
Oh.
Yeah, I do it one-on-one.
That's a whole other.
Yeah, I personally went to bridal classes with a bunch of other people, and I didn't like it at all.
What did you not like about it?
That it was. Each person interpreted what the teacher said and vocalized it, and it put these other ideas into my head that were not
your
necessary. Were not the way I would interpret it, and were not necessary. And it was more them utilizing the information based on their sometimes misconceptions.
Well, I pictured like your tea and Torah. I picture getting together.
No,
with
this
the
is
group
very
and,
personal.
And
well, the bridal classes are very personal.
So that makes a lot of sense because you may get some very personal and private sexual questions, like what's acceptable or what. I mean, I don't even know, but things that people might not want to share with the whole class.
Well, what I always say is that Judaism is about simcha, is about happiness and pleasure, and everything's allowed. everything's allowed.
I understand that.
I know, but I just want to put that out there because that is a misconception.
I'm glad you did. Okay, everything's a pleasure and everything is allowed. Okay.
Yes.
I was thinking that, you know, my question, I might feel silly asking a question in a group. Yes, that seems like maybe a silly question or not a good question or...
That's why I do these bridal classes privately.
Oh, how lovely.
And the other thing that comes into play is being a communal leader, being married, all of the time around wedding, there's a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
you see it on those TV shows, like Bridezilla.
But thank God, I've never had any Bridezillas. Right. But I'm able to really be there for the individual and tell them that everything's going to be okay.
Then this can go on just a lifetime. I mean, it's not like you have to enroll in class in September, but once you know you're getting married, you can say, may I, thank you for doing this. You had asked me before, is that cheating to send the same love letter to everybody?
Yes.
How many do you have? Well, it doesn't matter because you're going to have ongoing.
Yeah, no. So I want this to be something that is part of my class that, a year in or, you know, a few months in, I send them a letter and it's also a bit of a reminder that God's still there in the relationship, you know, so, you know, stick that in too.
So how can you do that? You can have kind of a core letter for sure.
Yes.
That you can, you know, I'm so big on handwriting, as you know, and you can't, and if there's more that you want to say, you could certainly on some beautiful font have your basic. And then yourself, you can add in your handwriting.
No, I have personal relationships with a lot of these people. So
I know
it won't. I know that maybe the base will be the same, but it definitely will.
So you could do the whole thing in your handwriting.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I see. Yeah. So it's not like you have to do 30 of them at once, of course.
Yeah.
But the memory of the cabbage, you did just say that you were, it was into. Okay. Yes. Oh, and that's going to be something that's going to go in their wedding album.
Maybe.
Oh, I bet. I mean, look at people keep the cocktail napkins.
Yeah.
With their names on them. They're surely going to keep this. And then their children are going to find them. These letters. I'm big on that.
Yes.
Children and grandchildren are going to find
them. Well, that was my other love letter that I did with you was the letters I have for my grandparents.
Right.
So it's
And
definitely...
don't they mean a lot? Don't you learn a lot?
Yeah.
So your great-grandchildren are going to know about an exceptional legacy and what they were connected to. Oh, thank you for doing this with
You're
me.
Welcome.
I could listen to you for
thank
hours.
You,
well, I'm saying I could. I have
thank
listened
you, Janet,
to you
for being
hours.
An inspiration.
I just love learning with you. I always learn something new. And we talk about a lot of things, because every time I have a question, if I've heard something on the street, people what people think, and I have a couple of people that I go to in various walks of life, like, is this true? And you've always got the beautiful truth.
Thank you.
Right there.
It's
right
an
there.
Honor. It's an honor.
Thank you for so much for doing this. All right, one more reason to write a love letter for those of you who teach, to the students you've taught. And I like what you said. It's a reminder later of what the basis of it was. Oh, thank you. Will you come back and do some other
for
teaching?
Sure. For sure.
Thank you. All right. Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And I will have somebody else for you soon that, oh, just everything's a learning. Honestly, if you keep your ears open in life, you can't help but learn something wonderful every day. Thank you. Bye.